Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Double Sheelix. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Sally. And today, we are super excited to bring you this episode for more reasons than one. The first being that we have both finally finished our PhDs and graduated. So now, I guess we're Dr. Kayla and Dr. Sally. And we are super stoked to be talking with you guys all today on this episode, where we're just going to be sharing our grad school reflections, highs, lows, and what we learned along the way. Now, you might be saying, isn't that what you do on every episode? And like, yes, but also this episode will be like focused with intentionality towards people who are graduate students, want to be graduate students, or work with graduate students in some way, whether as an undergrad or as a faculty. So welcome to the episode.
Yeah, it'll be a little informal. Focused might be a strong word for this episode. But hopefully the content is still interesting. I've had a lot of students ask me, what did you wish that you knew? And pretty much everything I wish I knew before I started. But that's not possible. So instead of trying to answer that question, we decided to talk about some of our personal experiences in a PhD. And hopefully just hearing some of them might be interesting or at least useful.
You know, why not just talk about yourself? Okay, no.
We're celebrating, right?
Yes, exactly. Welcome. If you have also recently graduated, we hope you relate because, man, the PhD is a long time. When we started, I was like 22, right? Fresh out of college. I know that's not the case for everyone, but that was the case for me. I was fresh out of college. I was like, I'm in grad school now. And I leave now grad school, like soon-ish, I will be 30. It's like a significant part of my life has passed and things have happened outside of school. Life has changed in many enormous ways. And yeah, so it's sort of like in the PhD time passes, but it also stands still because like I look at my friends who didn't go to grad school and they're on like their third job. And I'm out there like, where's my first job?
I like the PhD comic that says something about the members of the lab group when you started versus the members of the lab group when you left. And I also think about that when reflecting on the PhD, like, oh, remember all those other people way back when we started?
Well, Kayla, you showed that. You showed at Kayla's exit seminar, public thesis defense portion thing. She showed a picture of the first group photo, which was like her and a bunch of strangers. And then the last group photo, which was like her and all the current lab members. And the only two people that overlapped in both photos were her and her PI. So.
I knew I had to leave.
Yeah. In my situation, I was the first student to join the lab after my PI moved to Berkeley from a different school. And so there wasn't a lot of older students in the lab. There was one student that moved who was like a fourth year. But he wasn't there in the beginning. He like stayed at the old school and then like moved to Berkeley after a while. And then there was like two postdocs and then there was me. So from the beginning, I was one of the students who had been in, or one of the people that had been in lab the longest. And so I think as like a second year student being like the most expert one in like many different, the person who had used it in the lab the longest, I wouldn't say I was the most expert, but it was like a very interesting thing. And I think like, that's advice I always give to students is like lean on the older students in your lab because I didn't have that. Like there weren't really older students.
Yeah.
Not only for like experiments, but also for like, hey, how does quals work in this department? Hey, how does the PI think about publishing papers? Like I did some experiments. Like how do I tell him that it needs to be a paper now?
Yeah. No, that's so true. Did you feel like it took you longer to get started? Were you helping set up the lab?
I did not have to do very much lab setup because I joined in May after rotations. And so they'd been there like a while. So the basics were done, but I would say like, you know, we had most of the most important equipment. But there was a lot in terms of the social setup of the lab, if that makes sense. We were always bringing on new students and a lot of visiting scholars. And I don't know, I thought it was kind of cool to like have that unofficial responsibility of welcoming everyone and such. But at the
really,
same,
you really set the precedent for a lot of things. I mean, obviously people will bring their own flavors.
Yeah, but no, I think I did. And I mean, yeah, no, it's my podcast. I can say that. No. Yeah, I think I did. in a good way.
Just say you were awesome, Sarah.
That, thank you. I think I did. And I think a lot of the younger students like appreciated that. But I will say I did have a student once, I was like a third year, and the student was like, oh, Sally, since you're the lab manager, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I am not the lab manager. I am a student. I am trying to graduate. This is not my responsibility. And so that was a big wake up call for me that I have to do less of that and do more focusing on myself. And I think at a certain point, my PI realized the same thing. And he like unmade me the safety officer. And he like took away all these responsibilities to like give me the freedom to finish my degree. So I think that was, I think we talked about this on a past episode, but like, if you're the safety officer, get out. Like after a year, move on. If you're overburdened with a lot of work, and Kayla, I think you could talk about this for like 20 hours, which is only one millionth of the number of hours you spent training people.
Yeah, so I was the microscope super user. Did we talk about this on another episode? I don't remember anymore.
The audience doesn't remember.
Okay. If I don't remember, then hopefully no one else does. I was a microscope user, super user, which I really enjoyed that. Like I love scopes. I think they're so cool. It was also the most heavily used piece of equipment, and training is super important because if somebody messes it up, it messes everybody up for a long time. So it was taking like a lot of time. So eventually I had to find a replacement and be like, I need to also finish things in one day.
Yeah, I remember.
It worked out at the end. Now that we're done, I can say that it did work out, but.
Some stressful moments where you're like, someone put oil on the not oil objective, Sally. And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Yes, those poor objectives. There's even a red panda, or at least there was a red panda photo with tears drawn on it. And then there's a note, a figure caption. This is in the microscope room. There was a figure caption that said, Kayla crying over broken objectives. So I guess if that's the reputation I earned, I will take that. Anyway, okay. We see we're already sidetracked and we're only like 10 minutes in. So we should talk about our highs and lows. We can start. Do you want to share one low and then I'll share one low? No, other way around. Start with highs, go to our lows, and then go back to our second high.
Yeah, like a sandwich. Sounds good. Yeah,
like a sandwich. Okay, first high.
I think one of them that we haven't talked about on the podcast before is starting the podcast. First of all, it's given us a lot of opportunities to meet amazing people, to maintain our strong friendship, to, you know, whatever, like, it's fun. We like doing it. But I think the more important thing from the context of how it helped me to succeed in graduate school is that, you know, in graduate school, you spend a lot of time, like, using your brain and doing work. And for me, at least in the kinds of work that I was doing, or maybe just in the way that I was doing the work, it doesn't usually work. Like, most experiments don't give you, like, the thing that you need to do the next thing in a productive way. And so I feel like in graduate school, like, your level of effort is more or less constant, if not increasing. But your level of results is very piecewise step function, in that there's, like, nothing, 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 slight increase, nothing, 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 huge decrease, nothing, 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 you know? And so it's, like, even the highs of like publishing a paper, which is fun, like they don't really last that long, right? Like you get the acceptance and then the next day you have to do copy edits on the proof. So it's like, cool.
It feels very drawn out. Like you're like,
Yeah. But I felt like for the podcast, in addition to all the other benefits it's gotten us in terms of growing our network and helping other students succeed, it's like you put in your brain and you put in your work and you put in your time and you put in your creativity and your innovation and energy, and like you get stuff out of it that's like more or less.
Yeah. And it's not like
effort.
It's not like you spend a few hours editing and then it just doesn't work and you have to start over. Like if you edit it, you will get there. Or if you produce it, you will get a product.
If you write a blog post, it will be posted. And then, so I don't know, I feel like that was really important for me to have something where I could be expending my creative energy and get out tangible success or at least progress. And so when students are struggling in grad school, that's always what I ask. And I say like, are you doing besides grad school? And like often the answer is nothing. And I understand, like, there were many months where we don't release episodes because life, like, you can't always do it at all of your times, but think about if there's something you could add to your life that kind of fulfills those same needs to be creative and innovative that we all have, that's besides doing another QPCR, and like maybe this time it will work.
I definitely share the podcast high. I really like that it gives me a time to think about science, the process of science, and I am going to refer all my future students to specific episodes.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be like, before I read your paper, I want you to listen to this episode.
Speaking of which, we do have now a Double Shelix blog. So you can go to our Double Shelix website and click on blog. I've written a post about toxic mentorship and how to support students, or how to identify that a situation might be toxic so that you can like not join the lab, or if you are in the lab, like start thinking about other strategies. And Kayla, she has been like churning out blog posts like nobody's business. And I think her quote was, well, now I'm at a new institution, so all these things keep coming up again.
Yes, that's my goal, is to stop repeating myself.
Tell us about your new blog posts.
Oh yeah, so the most recent one was about writing fellowship applications or grad school applications, or in general applications, but in that kind of vein. Probably the first, I have a lot of thoughts on writing and presenting that I need to get out, so there'll probably be a handful of those. But we are also interested in guest writers. Yeah. So if any of you out there feel like you have something that you really want an audience to know about science, like feel free to send us a pitch. And we're looking for shorter, long articles. We're interested in some scientist personal stories as well. And like when I say personal, like I mean personal, professional, like what made you want to be in science? What was it like to be doing your PhD during X time? As well as like advice giving, skill building, any of those topics. So
yeah. I mean, you've heard our episodes, so you like the audience.
You know what we're interested in.
But yeah, just email us and you can be involved. Yeah, so I guess doing the podcast was a highlight. Kayla.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was one of your highlights?
Okay, so one of my big highlights was getting the F31 fellowship. I had to think about it because I'm thinking about applying for the F32, so I keep getting them confused. But if you haven't applied for, it's an NIH training fellowship. If you haven't applied for one, it's pretty extensive for a fellowship application. I think it came out to be about 30 pages. I mean, not every page is word dense or even effort dense, if that makes sense. Most of the effort is in the research proposal itself, but it definitely took a lot of time. And it also took one of my least favorite things to do, which was reaching out to professors for like letters of support. In addition to the recommendation letters, which already, I really hate asking for things. So that's always a personal challenge, but definitely asking for a lot of things felt like a lot. Anyway, the real high of it was that I got it, and I got it on the first submission. So you have two chances to submit, and I got it on the first submission, and I was pretty stoked about that.
But you didn't even tell me. I had to hear about this from someone else. When you achieve, you have to tell your close friends. It's not bragging, people.
Yeah, I think we're all bad about that, right?
Yeah, well, we are.
Yeah, and when I say we, I mean like you and me and the couple of other of our colleagues that we spend our Thursday lunches at.
And I think also for you, like winning that award, like you want to be a professor. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Here's a story. I had to stop telling people like, oh, my co-host Kayla, yeah, she's going to be a professor at a top school, because they thought that you had already gotten the job. They didn't understand that it was just me expressing my confidence in you. They were like, it's okay. Third year. What do you mean she's got a professor job? And I was like, no, like she will get one because she's amazing.
The want to be, you can put that in and that clarifies that. But it's okay. My some of my family thinks I'm a professor.
It's fine. It's better than thinking you're in med school. Not that med school is bad. It's just like very off base for what.
That was the first 5 years of grad school. And then they like kind of accepted the grad school part. And now I think they think I'm a professor.
But anyway, I have to imagine it feels good to like write an NIH style application where it's more like in the style of what you would write as a faculty rather than like other kinds of applications, which are more about like your personal hopes and dreams and rather than like XYZ, what you're going to do in the lab.
Yeah, it's definitely different. And I mean, it doesn't have quite the same paperwork, rigor. I'm not sure what the right word is. It's not quite the same as a full grant, but it has a lot of the same elements, and it definitely, like, you're using the same kind of thought process to put it together, and it's a really useful experience, and it was nice because my advisor was very helpful with feedback, so I feel like I learn a lot in terms of writing by example, so, like, getting his feedback on a draft, I could go through and be like, oh, I see why he would change that. Then the goal was to try to replicate that throughout my future work.
Yeah.
So that was pretty helpful.
And I feel like most PIs, like, they don't have a lot of word budget for giving positive feedback on writing. You know, like, if you do bad, they'll like do a paragraph about how it should be better. If you do good, they're like, sounds good. Or like, nice, exclamation. You're like, whoa, an exclamation. Like, this will last for a week. But for me, it was all about like my first manuscript. Like, I turned in my first draft of my first manuscript. It comes back like all red from track changes. But then I turned in my first draft of my last manuscript. And he's like, this paragraph's too long. Put more detail here. I think this needs a citation. You know, I'm like, oh, that means it was good.
Yeah.
And well, I say
strangely that kind of feedback is still a high.
Exactly. And I say that.
Oh, they really liked it this time.
Yeah. Though I just got that manuscript back from peer review and it went to 5 peer reviewers, you guys.
Oh my goodness.
Which is like, well, thanks for not rejecting me, but at this point.
Your rebuttal document will be twice as long as the paper.
Listen, especially because many said the paper was too long.
Well, the ironic notes.
Yes, but also didn't have enough information.
Yeah, you know.
No, I mean, it happens to everyone. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
I opened the email, skimmed it. It was like, we're going to read this later. And then I mm-hmm. did.
Okay, we'll switch to lows. This will be a low point in our episode.
I mean, so before this recording, we were planning. And Kayla was like, okay, Sally, what are some of your lows? And I was like, well, getting a PhD is hard. And like a lot of it, like low-key sucks. There's just like a basal level that's like non-ideal. For different people, that basal level can be very different, right? Like depending on all kinds of factors like your health, your financial situation, like your friends and family support system, your relationship with your advisor, like if you have a toxic mentor, like if you have a good project, or, you know, there's like many things that can determine the basal level. And I think like I had a lot of positives going, like, you know, no major health crises or whatever. But yeah, I think grad school is hard, and especially in the middle, projects aren't going that well. And the ones that are going well, there's still like a long time before they're going to have like amount to anything. I don't know.
Everyone kind of jokes about the third year slump, but it seems like it might be a real thing.
Yeah. And I feel like, did my third year slump start in second year and like go until fifth year?
It could happen.
No, but it sometimes felt like that in the moment.
If you do tissue culture, you can relate, but sometimes in TC, I would think that I would probably be in TC forever.
Yeah.
Like, literally ever. Which is not the worst if you have a good audiobook, but it is the worst if you don't.
So in 2019, I read like 70 books. And most of those were audiobooks that I listened to doing tissue culture, synthesis workups and other like super monotonous tasks. So
yeah.
Like, I don't mind working hard. I don't mind working long hours, but it's sort of like when it all feels fruitless, that's right. When I'm like, ugh. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess it's hard to sum up the low that, like, sometimes grad school sucks and, like, a quippy phrase, like, I want an F31. Like, it doesn't, like, roll off the tongue. But I guess this is just to say, like, there was definitely points in grad school where I was like, all these other people are graduating, but I don't know if I will. And it's like, that's ridiculous. Like, in hindsight, like, if I had listened to my own podcast and heard myself be like, girl, you're being ridiculous. Grad school sucks sometimes and you just keep going and it will work out and you are doing a good job and you're doing what you need to be, you know, like I knew that, but yeah. I think like if I feel that way, then I think a lot of other people.
I'm guessing it's not an uncommon feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. That was like, I don't know if the audience is taking anything productive from the last 5 minutes of me being like, sometimes grad school sucks. Okay. Like it's not a big deal.
Maybe just a shared camaraderie.
Yeah. But if it's like really sucking, you should do something about it. And so
that's a whole nother episode.
Yeah. Which and we did like, call the mental future. Health and wellness episode.
Yes. Check that out.
But I think the things you can,
but there's like normal. Any job that you're doing has its, like, normal lows, and I feel the stuff we're describing is the normal lows. Like, it's okay, you get through it, it's exactly. worth it, exactly. but it still happens.
Right, yeah, and I think that's what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah.
And I will say, like, what kind of helped me to, like, see the end, one is that, like, realizing that I was being ridiculous and that I was doing a good job. I had many, like, not many, but I had, like, enough manuscripts, like, making it, like, along the journey or, like, projects making it along the path. And, like, as time passes, you've been doing all this, like, tedious work. And at the end, like, something is going to happen with that, hopefully. And also the other thing is, like, knowing when to ask for help.
Yeah.
And knowing, like, what to ask for.
And who to ask,
and like, how do you like need your PI to ask this person? Do you need to ask them?
Do you have a specific experience where this became an issue?
A specific experience? No. I mean, just like many small things. Yeah, getting other people to work on similar projects to you in your lab is so valuable. Because then there's other people who are becoming experts in the same thing that you're becoming an expert in. And so, like, for me, being able to, like, bounce ideas off of them and not feel like my only outlet for feedback was from my PI, right? So I mentioned that when I joined, I was, like, the first student to join when the lab moved to Berkeley. And so, and also in my first month, I wrote an R01 with my boss. It's like, he wrote two aims, I wrote two aims. It was also funded on the first try, but I feel like that can be more ascribed to his decades of experience rather than my input as a first year student in her first month in the lab.
Still a high end. You should own it.
Yeah, that was kind of a big deal. So anyway, so we get this R01 grant. And so like, I wrote the grant with him. And so in my mind, it was kind of like, okay, I have to now do this whole R01 by myself, which for like a first year, you're like, yeah.
You know, I'll do like, aim one this year and then aim two will take a little longer. So that'll be a year and a half. And then.
Yeah, no, like, yes, truth. But then like by second year, you're like, I don't actually know how to do any of this, you know, like you've tried all the experiments and none of them work. So like, now what? As time went on and we got like more students and postdocs working, not only like directly in collaboration with me, but also just like on other similar things. Like there's someone else using this instrument. Like there's someone else doing tissue culture. That was very helpful for me.
Yeah. I can tell you a specific experience on this note.
Yes, please.
It's not dramatic, but it was real when I was experiencing it. I had been trying for about a month to get this pull down assay to work, and the protein was disappearing every single time. I was like, where is this protein? And actually, you connected me with somebody who does
Ashley?
Yes.
First of all, connect oneself with Ashley at all times. She's amazing.
Major advice. Yes. Sorry, Ashley, anyway. If you get like 1,000 emails next week. But anyway, I was like, yeah, I'm doing this and this and this. And she's like, oh, you just need to use this other buffer. Otherwise, the protein is too sticky and it won't go through the wells. And I tried it. And guess what? It worked. Spending the 2 minutes sending her an email could have saved me a month of work and probably saved me several more trying to troubleshoot it.
Oh, yeah. And the number one advice I give to students who are having trouble, like, I guess I told you this advice, with a specific experiment, especially about something that no one in their lab has done before, is shadow someone in a different lab that does it every day. With COVID, like, that's harder, but even as simple as, like, oh, we only use this brand of whatever. And also, like, in the field, whatever your field is, some experiments have a reputation.
Yes.
And IP pulldowns have a reputation.
Oh, they do.
I was Ashley's roommate, and I remember when she was struggling with her IP pulldowns.
Yeah, so, well, I benefited from her hard-earned experience.
Yeah, so
some of the project that I'm doing now is part of this larger consortium, and they offer a travel grant for students to go from one lab to another, which, again, is sort of a moot point in the pandemic. The idea is that they give money so that students can go train in another lab. And I think that's such a good use of money, because especially for some of these kinds of experiments that are, there's a lot of details that are pretty hard to copy into a protocol. And sometimes you just don't know what's important, and being able to send somebody in real life and to get that experience and come back with it is super valuable.
Yeah, I know my lab has done that a few times for, like, animal models or, like, annoying antibodies. And I think a lesson that a lot of people have to unlearn after graduate school, like, when they go to have a real job, that's a whole debate, is grad school job, but whatever. When they go to have their first non-graduate school position, is that, like, their time is valuable.
Yeah.
Right? Like, at a startup company or whatever, they would never tolerate you wasting a month because you want to save a few bucks on antibodies. Okay. Kayla, I think our listeners who know you in real life are kind of like, Sally, why are you talking about the fact that grad school sucks a little bit? Shouldn't Kayla be, and, like, wasting our time? Like, shouldn't Kayla be talking about, like, what happens when you're in grad school and shit gets, like, super extremely ridiculously real?
Yeah. So I'm not laughing at the situation. I'm laughing because that comment was funny. Yeah, so to be real honest with you listeners, my grad school lows were probably 90% not related to grad school at all. And without, like, diving too deep into the personal side of it, basically a family member who's very close to me had a terminal illness and passed away all within the time that I was in grad school. And that was pretty terrible. And fortunately my advisor was really, really flexible with me. Like, I really want to be able to travel a lot and be part of this person's life while they're here. And, like, he was really flexible with that. And it was sometimes pretty exhausting to do that, but it was absolutely worth it. I didn't really feel like it was a situation where I needed to stop grad school. I considered it so the whole thing lasted about 2 years, and I did consider, like, do I actually need to, I can't think of the word.
Like, take a leave of absence?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Like, do I need to do that? And I thought through it pretty carefully, and I didn't feel like that was the right decision for me. But I still wanted to be there. So it was a lot of balancing work. And then, you know, obviously I was sad for many reasons related to this. I wish that I could give, like, real advice from that situation, but I feel like those kinds of stories are so unique to the person that it's almost hard to say how to deal with it appropriately. So
right. Like, 'cause for some people, the right answer would be to take a leave of absence and, like, be there, you know, right. But for some people that's not. And so it's hard to give blanket advice.
Right. Exactly. So I guess I don't actually want to give any advice. I just want to say that if you are experiencing something like this, like, I feel for you. And I don't know how your situation will work out, but I have a lot of peace about the decisions that I made. And I am proud that I was able to get my PhD and like balance these kind of two crazy phases of life at the same time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's easy to feel like your PhD can be like this bubble. But like I said, like when you leave graduate school, it's like time has passed. Yeah, and time didn't stand still in the real world.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of life happens. I mean, 6 years is a long time, right? There's a lot of life happening in that time. I hope that not everybody experiences as crazy as that or worse, but there's still a lot of weird life experiences that happen outside of lab that you're going to deal with.
Yeah. And yes, on the podcast, we have moments of honesty, like obviously Kayla has just shared, but there's a lot about our personal lives that we intentionally don't share just because, you know, read about the experiences of women in academia. We don't share everything, but I think that sort of sucks because like the number one way that like when I'm going through something, it's like the personal stories from other people.
But yeah.
When people don't share their personal stories because like you could be judged because of it.
I know what you mean.
Kayla, so you don't want to give any advice to people who are going through, you know, really, really tough times. Obviously because every situation is different. What, or do you have anything that you wish that people around you had realized or done for you, or that you're grateful that they did realize and did do for you? Like if for our listeners who have a colleague, you know, in the doldrums of.
You know, I did mention like my advisor support was pretty crucial, and faculty listening. I mean, that's a piece of advice is to find a plan to work with on students that are going through
extracurricular suffering.
Yes, extracurricular suffering. Because I mean, that made a huge difference for me. Peer support was very helpful. I mean, Sally's support was pretty touching in many ways. I felt like I was pretty well supported, and that definitely helped a lot. We're running low on time. Oh, shocker.
As in grad school, all good podcasts must come to an end.
Okay, so my other low was just, by comparison, it's going to seem kind of like a joke, but...
But at the time, before.
So my other low that maybe you have shared experience with is... waves of imposter syndrome with feeling waves of successfulness.
And as soon as you get a success, then you're like, well, I didn't deserve that.
It's not even always that. Sometimes it's just you do something and like, you know, it was good and like you feel good about it. And then I would do something that was not my best work. I could have done that better. and then I would derail into like, oh my gosh, I'm an imposter.
Specific times in grad school that this was like peak?
Yeah, I went through a deep wave of imposter syndrome after quals because you like get grilled, right? Mm-hmm. So I came from chemistry and I honestly was still pretty naive about how working in a bio lab worked, and kind of showed on a few questions, specifically ethics questions in my quals. Without making this like a 30-minute story about how I promise I really am ethical, I just didn't really understand like the difference between BSL-2 and BSL-3, and it was like a weird moment, that sort of thing. I definitely was feeling like an imposter after that. I think it's not an uncommon experience. Like I've talked to other students who've like felt like an imposter after their quals, and this one I feel better about sharing advice on, which is like, okay, you are learning from these other people, like take the time to consider what they're saying and try to learn like where your gaps are and do something about it. So like, I was like, you know what? I don't know enough about how some of the logistics around like an IRB works. So I'm going to go read about that and like read about how clinical trials work and stuff. So that was my fun beach reading for a while. It was like the NIH biosafety manual.
But also, I don't know if like hearing you talk about your difficult situation with a family crisis and then also hearing you talk about quals, I hope that you like you do realize, but like we can cut this out if you want, but I remember, Kayla, you got the first worst news about your family crisis like the day after your quals.
It did.
So
yeah,
so I think that some of these like feelings about the science were not a reflection of your excellent quals performance, but just another example of how life sucks sometimes and like the feelings and the things that are happening outside of lab can really impact your feelings about what's happening inside of lab.
Yeah. Pointing out that those two events coincided highlights that there is always some perspective to be had when thinking about a situation. And to recognize that sometimes it's hard to do that in the moment. I don't know. What's your last low? And then we can end on a high note.
Or
did you cover them both?
I kind of covered them because my other one, I was just going to talk more. Maybe this is like a whole episode just about difficult conversations. And I feel like that's something that I really improved on over the course of graduate school. Like a lot of first years come to me and they're like, Sally, I don't know how to tell my PI that I want to join their lab after rotations. And I'm like, this is like the hardest conversation that they've ever had with a professional adult. Or like, how do I tell my second choice PI that I'm not joining? They're going to hate me forever. And I'm like, no.
We should have a whole episode on talking with your advisor.
Yeah. But I just think like not only difficult conversations like with my advisor, who was like a pretty chill dude and I didn't feel like it was that difficult, but I mentored.
I'm sure he would love being described as a chill dude.
Well,
shout out Phil.
Yeah, hi. He listens. He's a big fan. Anyway, no, I would say like, you know, I had 10 mentees. Like I had a rotation student, I had 4 master students, and I had 5 undergrads. Having conversations with students about like, maybe this isn't working out. You know, like the first time I did that, that's kind of what I sounded like. But by the end, like all my students were convinced that it was their idea to pursue other passions. I mean, or they graduated. Having difficult conversations is like a definite strength that I gained. And I think it's something that most graduate students have to learn trial by fire. That's a skill that I definitely, a muscle that I strengthened in graduate school. And it's kind of started as a low, but like ended as a high.
No muscle pun intended.
Oh, Kayla, because my research is on marine muscles. Also highlights going to conferences. Always a boost.
Oh, yeah. We gotta have an episode on that, too. So I guess I can end my other high. Mm-hmm. It's gonna sound bad, but I promise it's good. So when mentees leave, I mean that in the best possible way. I've had some really positive experience with the people that I've worked with or mentored, and especially if they're, like, moving on to do something bigger or better, or, like, in this case, I was moving on, and I knew that they would continue to do great things. That was such a high.
Same. I like, have all the notes that they like write you. And they're like, dear Sally, thank you for, and you're just like, frame this. And then I would add to that, like, I feel like I've been in grad school so long. Like some of my mentees are nearly graduated from med school, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like watching them go on to fulfill their dreams. And that's the best.
Maybe some faculty listeners can relate.
Yeah, so I guess the lesson here is, like, write a thank you note to your mentor.
So they can frame it and keep it forever.
And I think undergrads are like, oh, should I tell Phil that I got into med school? And I'm like,
yes.
Girl, yes.
Absolutely, yes.
That's why he does this.
We need some highs, okay?
Yeah. And I think also, like, not only for my direct mentees, but also, like, now as, like, the lab matriarchs, or we were before we, like, left, like the other lab members, you know, like I remember you when you were a little first year and you thought you could do AIM-1 of an R01 in 6 months, just like me. And now you're like killing it, doing amazing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Like I love bragging about my other lab members and how amazing they are.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm sure PIs are like, listening to this and they're like, that's why I became a PI. Well, the good one.
Yeah.
Anyway, listeners, have you recently finished your PhD? Will you soon be finishing your PhD? Are you technically soon finishing your PhD eventually, but you also feel like it's not real and never going to happen because what is life, also a pandemic? Do you know people that are doing their PhD? If any of these word vomits have triggered a thought in your mind, please share it with us at doubleshelixpodcast@gmail.com. Like I said, we have about 1,000,000,000 episode ideas, many of which were generated in this, a small fraction of which were generated in this episode.
1,000,000.
So help us narrow down what we should talk about next. Like, let us know.
And our email is
doubleshelixpodcast@gmail.com.
I'm looking at you because I always mess it up. I always forget the podcast.
Well, like, we couldn't secure the same handle on all the platforms.
Oh, so close.
Like, on Twitter, we're just doubleshelixpod.
It's, yeah.
Character limits. It's, like, a whole thing.
Well, it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
There's no other double helixes, as far as I know.
There is a drill bit that's, like, a fancy drill bit called the double helix, but we have bumped them out of the top Google results. Or maybe that's just on my computer because, like, the AI has learned that I don't care about drill bits, but search it for yourself. And then while you're there, go to our blog.
Love it. Yeah, I've never gotten that search, but I'm also heavily biased here, so.
Exactly. Thanks, listeners. Stay tuned. We have a lot in the pipeline.
We do. Yeah, just that's another important point. Just because we're graduated, double helix doesn't stop.
Yeah, we are all about the trainee development. We used to say the grad school grind, but now we're not in grad school, so we had to, like, rebrand, but it's the same thing.
Just from a different perspective. Thanks for listening, and until next time.